Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar, where we sit down and talk with interesting professional guitar players, uncover their stories, and discover what makes them tick. If you love guitar, music, and the backstory of people's lives, stick around. You're in the right place. If you're a business owner and you want to increase your cash flow, or if you're a label or artist and you want to promote new music, then listen up. For information about advertising on Everyone Loves Guitar, including information on geographically targeted ads, go to everyonelovesguitar.com/advertise. That's everyonelovesguitar.com/advertise. The Be Fulfilled Journal helps you be more honest with yourself and with others and be more open to handling things you've avoided dealing with for years. It's a 12-week online and journal program that helps you identify and eliminate things you do that are causing you stress and live in more gratitude and joy. It was actually developed by a long-term friend of mine who got sober in 2008, and he's put together a great deal just for my listeners. You get the 300-page hardcover journal and access to the 12-week video program online, plus free shipping, plus membership in a private Facebook support group with others going through the program, plus a 5-day mini course showing you how to let go of stuff that's draining your energy, plus a 30-day 100% money-back guarantee. To start your journey and get all the bonuses, go to befulfilledjournal.com/ELG. That's befulfilledjournal.com/ELG. Hey, this is Craig. Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar. As you know, last week we dropped our 500th episode, and this 2 weeks we're going to just be playing some of the greatest hits and some of my favorite episodes. And I wanted to spend a little time talking with you a little bit of before each one with some stories and memories that I have of these particular episodes. One thing to keep in mind is once we start back, we're going to start back with fresh new shows on Monday, June 10th. We got some great guests lined up. But on Tuesday, June 11th, from that point moving forward, virtually all the shows, with the rare exception of someone who's going to have an exception to being filmed, are going to be on YouTube as well. Like the videos, it's just videos of us talking, but for some reason that appears to be real popular. But anyway, so go to our YouTube channel. Just go to YouTube and look up Everyone Loves Guitar. And if you do me a favor, hit the subscribe button. And then hit the little bell next to the subscribe button so you'll be notified when new ones come out. And of course, as always, all the audio is going to be on the podcast and distributed everywhere. So today's guest is the one and only Paul Jackson. Paul is one of the two guitar players from Blackberry Smoke, the other being Charlie Starr. Actually, Paul and Charlie have two of the most popular Everyone Loves Guitar shows. Both of those guys' episodes are consistently always in the top 5 to 10 most popular episodes, and their fan base is really huge. You know, they have a very close-knit group of fans called Brothers and Sisters. They have meetups all over the country and very strong fan base, very old school sort of jam band-ish fan base, but they're not really a jam band. They're a great rock band. If you don't know Blackberry Smoke, check them out. In fact, they're coming down here soon. I can't wait to go to the show. Paul is just a great guy. He's genuinely one of the kindest, oozes nice. He's just a nice person, extremely humble and grounded. You know, the thing that attracted me to him and that I liked after hearing his story was he had a very rough start, and he talks about all of it. And I'm always attracted to those people that are able to overcome difficult starts, because it's not easy. And not only did he overcome it, but he overcame it without any bitterness at all. And when he had every right to be bitter and nasty, and instead he's all about helping people. He's incredibly supportive of me and of the show, and just a good person overall. You can listen to some of these stories about, like, he talked about his mom turning him on to Motley Crue and some of the dreams that he had that he was able to accomplish, and I'm so very happy for him. He's also from Florida, from Northern Florida, Pensacola, I believe, and just a great guy. He's traveled all over the world. I believe he lives in Georgia today, but really cool guy. Got a great love story, how he met and fell in love with his current wife, and he's got a super cool guitar collection. He plays vintage Gibsons, as I believe Charlie Starr does as well, but I think you're going to like this. He's a key member of honestly, Blackberry Smoke is one of the most successful bands out there today. And again, just what a lovely guy. Very genuine. You know, he talks a lot about his family, and on social media, he's always, you know, posting pictures of his kids. And I'm really lucky to have come into contact with him because, you know, the name of the band's last album was Find a Light. Paul does a great job of shining a light, that's for sure. So enjoy the show today with Paul Jackson. Let me know how you like it, and I will talk to you tomorrow. Hey, everybody, this is Craig Garber from Everyone Loves Guitar, man, and I got such a wonderful guest today. He's not only a great player, a soulful guy, he's also just a real sweet guy as well, and I'm really happy to finally get to talk with him. We're with Paul Jackson, one of the original founding members and the co-lead guitar player of Blackberry Smoke. He's got a real interesting story. He was originally born Paul Scarpato in Philadelphia. And then Paul Jackson was raised in Pensacola, and here's how this all went down. His mom got married right out of high school to a guy named Tom Scarpato. He was in the Navy, and then they got they were originally in Philly, and he was in the Navy, and he got transferred down to Pensacola, which is a big Navy base up there. Then Paul's biological dad and mom got divorced when Paul was just a year and a half old. Dad decided, hey, man, I'm not down on kids, which is, you know, something that you kind of want to think about before you have a couple. But he did not want to raise Paul and his brother, so he gave them up for adoption to the man Paul considers his real dad, Captain Eddie Frank Jackson, who is a firefighter and a really good guy who was unfortunately killed fighting a fire when Paul was only 12 years old. Man, that's a lot of fucking moving parts between zero and 12, man.
Yeah,
none of which you have coping skills for at that age either, man. That's the bad thing. Up until that point, Paul had a really normal childhood, obviously, until his dad passed. He played baseball, really good baseball player, fished constantly, which is a ton of great fishing down here in the Florida lakes. His dad was his baseball coach, and he's actually in the Little League Hall of Fame here in the state of Florida. His dad also loved music. They listened to Chipmunk Punk vinyl one day, and his dad came home from the fire department and says, hey, man, that Chipmunk Punk is cool, but let me show you something really cool. And he put on Chuck Berry, and that was pretty much the day that Paul got totally turned on by music, and that became something that was his intense passion. After his dad died, obviously, he wasn't into anything very much, including baseball. Somehow, he got on his feet, really got into computers. His mom bought him a Commodore 128 for Christmas, and for you millennials, that was a thing that was about as slow as anything can be. It weighed about 40 pounds, and it held about as less data than you could put on your iPhone, even the shittiest iPhone you have. But his mom was getting worried about him because he was always in the room on his computer. It was 1985, and his mom says, hey, look, I got to get you out of the house, so I got you some concert tickets, and we're going to go. Now, how cool is that your mom gets you concert tickets, and not only concert tickets, but to Motley Crue?
Yeah.
That was
crazy. I mean, it's, I thank her and yell at her a lot about it.
Yeah, I bet. Anybody else who's listening to this, if your mom bought home concert tickets for you to see Motley Crue at 12, email me, because I'm willing to bet out of the thousands and thousands of people listening to this, no one's going to email me. As soon as he saw Motley Crue, he then told his mom he had to get a guitar immediately. Her being the sweetheart she was, she bought him a guitar the very next day, and then the rest of the story is pretty much got written. Paul had a really successful band in Pensacola, but he was like the big dog in the small pond, or the big fish in the small pond. So he moved to Atlanta in 91, and he put a cover band together at that point to obviously get paid and make some cash on the side and keep playing. He did that for 8 years. That's how he met Charlie Starr, who I interviewed a while back. So I think it was episode 129. You can check that out if you want. They got out of that band, and then they started Blackberry Smoke, and here he is. Blackberry Smoke has released 6 studio albums since 2004, a live album, and 3 EPs, including their latest release, which is called Find a Light. We'll talk about that a little bit. Again, for more information, check out Charlie's interview I did back in episode 129. And man, I'm so happy to have you. I saw you guys open for Warren down here at, I think it was Janice Landing, maybe probably 5 or 6 years ago.
Yeah, I believe that's where it was.
Yeah, or it was that. Yeah, it was outdoors. It was Janice. Yeah, what a great show, man. That was the first time I saw y'all. It was freaking phenomenal. So.
Oh, thanks.
Thank you for everything you do musically, man. I've enjoyed tons of your music, man.
Thanks. Thanks so much.
Hey, first of all, I want to thank you very much for sharing that story. I'm sorry you lost your dad, obviously.
I appreciate it.
But it looks like, in all honesty, the time you guys spent together was incredibly important to you and made loads of memories. And I'm really happy you got to do that, man.
Yeah, I got into a really great family, adopted into a great family, you know, just fantastic people, you know, speak their mind whenever they feel like talk. It's just great.
That's wonderful.
You know? It's some Florida Indians, man.
Yeah. You said your dad was Native American, right?
Yeah.
So what kind of cultural stuff did you get exposed to there?
You know, whenever the fair, Pensacola Interstate Fair, they called it, you know, my relatives, they would go out there and do their chant, they dress up, you know, and me and my brother weren't allowed to do it because, you know, we weren't in the tribe.
Sure.
You know, we were not blood, but we got to put all the stuff on backstage and whatever. And it was really cool. I mean, they did that kind of thing, you know, to show people, you know, that heritage, you know, that what Native Americans were about, you know, that kind of stuff. Cause like in early 70s, people were kind of like, eh.
Oh, I know, man. Yeah. Especially down here, to be honest with you.
Yeah. And to be honest, still that way a little bit.
But, really?
You know, it's, I think people are realizing, what Native Americans meant to to this land back in the day. I mean, a lot of people are just reading about it more. But yeah, most of my family down there are just good folks, you know.
Was there like a lot of spiritual stuff? Because I know Native Americans are very spiritual people. Did you get turned on to any of that? Like, because it's very different than, you know, like white culture.
Whenever we would go to the reservation, like in Atmore, Alabama, you know, that's where a lot of them went. Other than that, no, we just always, everybody was so close, you know, outside of, you know, being in the fire department family, which is another thing on its own.
Oh, yeah, right.
My dad, his cousins, his, you know, brothers, sisters, all this stuff. We were always together and we're really tight still.
That's great.
We couldn't talk to them for 20 years and go down there and it'd be like we never left each other kind of thing.
That's awesome. That's precious, man, to be honest with you. That's really special. Yeah.
No matter where you're at, you have love and you have family.
Do they come see you when you play there?
Yeah.
That must be nice.
Really cool. We did where I saw Motley Crue at, this Pensacola Civic Center. We played there with Leonard Skinner. And it was always a dream of mine as a kid to play that place. I used to drive by it, go onto the beach, tell mom, there's one of these days I'm going to play that place.
That is, dude, I just got goosebumps, man. That is really cool.
And it took me 20-something years, but I did it.
Hey, man, how many people could say that? Seriously.
Right.
That's awesome, man.
It was, that place holds like 14,000-15,000 people, and it seemed like the entire place was my family.
That's great, man. What a nice experience. You must have felt like $1 million, though, doing
that. Yeah, it was very cool. It was awesome.
That's really cool. Not many people get to live out their dreams. That's really nice, man. Congratulations.
Thanks. Thank you. This is great. It was a good time.
So let me ask you this. How did you manage to – in looking back, I mean, that's a lot of shit to have to deal with. You know, your biological dad basically bolts. Your dad passes away. And like I said, who has coping skills to process this at that age? What? And it's just a lot of stuff to put on your shoulders.
I just think, you know, the constant, my mom, after she had left. Now, I do want to say one thing about Tom Scarpato. I have no ill will or anything. And he's, you know, I'm still talk to the Scarpato family. They're my family too.
That's really great. And, man.
Yeah. I mean, I can understand he was, you know, young and probably just in the Navy, didn't know what it was. I totally get that, you know,
but you didn't start like that. It took you like, how long did it take you to get there? Cause that's a really fucking cool place to be.
What, like you broke up a little bit. What?
How long? Like, I'm assuming when you were a kid, you didn't feel this way, and it probably took you a while to get to that.
No,
point.
Dude, I really didn't even. Dad came into my life. There was just something there. I just knew that guy was my dad.
Yeah.
From the day I met him, the moment.
Yeah.
You know, it was kind of young. Mom, my mother was like, she's like, the first day your dad met you guys, he came over to the apartment and I had you in suits. And you came out. My mom used to dress me and my brother alike. You know, he's a year and a half older than I am. But
oh my God. We're in a suit in Pensacola in August. That's probably not fun.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, he walks in the house and says hello to us. And my mom said that he looked at us and said, "You guys don't want to be in those suits, do you?" We said, "No." She just said, "No, sir." He said, "Go change." So we were like, perfect.
Yeah.
But yeah, but back to Tom. I mean, I know him now, you know, and he's a good dude. I get it. I mean,
that's really,
I have no ill will. I wasn't raised to hate.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't raised to, you know, I'd to be grudge holding like that. Yeah. It's not really good for your soul.
No, man, it's a lot easier, but it doesn't, I would think it took a, you know, that's really big of you, man. It's something that a lot of people probably can't get to.
Yeah, it's like I said, I think it had all to do with about how I was raised. Hmm. You know, I talked to him. He comes to our show sometimes. I say hey to him and, you know, I'd sit down and have a beer with him. But
good.
Yeah.
That's awesome, man. I'm really happy that you got that going.
Oh yeah.
Machine shop in Flint, Michigan. We talked earlier. There's a really cute interview of your son interviewing, right. and you said that's your favorite venue to play. Why is that?
Yeah, because of the people there, man. Ever since the day we walked in that place, everybody is it's like a family in there too. You know. The owners, the people that work there, and it's a cool little intimate vibe. And if I had a bar, I want it to be just like that.
Really? How big is it? How many people does it hold?
Man, that's maybe, God, maybe 500, 600 people.
That's a good size. Good size. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a cool, I mean, it's just a cool place. It's like a local bar I'd want to go to and hang out. Yeah.
I remember when I interviewed Charlie, he told me a story. Man, I'm going to say this place was in some place you all went, maybe in New Mexico or something, and you get there and nobody was there. And the guy just like, it was closed and the guy was just showing up like, oh, and you're like,
yeah,
well,
I remember that.
We got a gig. Talk about that. That was such a great story. Where was that?
Oh God. It was in Arizona. He said, right.
New Mexico, or someplace. Maybe. I don't remember. It was someplace there out in the, you know, the West, in the desert West, you know,
I think we did.
Maybe it was Arizona. I don't.
Did he say we played the show?
I think the guy just paid you. And like
to not play,
play because nobody was there. And you guys were like, and he's like, well, we didn't promote or something like that. And you guys are like kind of road weary or something like that.
I remember us getting there. And it, if I can remember correctly, it was hot as hell. Obviously, it's out there. It's hot. And I found out we had a day off. And I was like, awesome. That's great. You know, it's like, cool. I mean, obviously we wanted to play.
Sure.
If that guy would have let us, we'd have played for nobody.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. You know, I think that's almost exactly what Charlie said.
Cause I mean, we don't go all that way not to play. We'd rather play than stand around and with our thumbs up our butts, you know. Yeah.
But I think the place was closed even, and the guy happened to randomly like, "Hey, who are you guys?" And like, we're the band or something, you know. Is there a lot of funky stories?
I think he may have let us use his bathroom, and that's pretty much about it.
There you go. Is there a lot of funny things like that happen back in the old days?
Yeah, there's some crazy stuff like getting paid, you know, with blow or something instead of cash, and we're like, I need the cash.
Yeah, man, we're supposed to walk into Publix with that.
I don't think I can get ramen noodles with this.
Yeah, right. Wow, that's wild.
Yeah, we played anywhere and everywhere they would let us set up. I mean, we didn't care.
Yeah,
you know, and that to me is, you know, what I try to tell people that ask me about like the other musicians, like, what did y'all do? It's like, we played, man. We just played. It's, you have to get out. You got to leave your town because the people in your town that know you, they could see you any day they want.
Hmm.
So you just have to get out and go. And we were lucky enough to, in our individual lives, have jobs that would let us go do that.
Mm.
And come back on a Monday morning and run straight into work and work until, you know, we had to go off and play again.
What kind of work were you doing back in the day?
I was a printer.
Okay.
Yeah. I'd worked at these printing companies and, you know, it seemed like every job I had, to be quite honest with you, whether it was hell in Arby's or whatever I was working, Blockbuster Video, remember them?
Yeah, I do remember those. Yeah,
it's like they knew what I was doing, and they didn't mind.
That was really cool.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, it's all the Blockbuster fired me for having long hair, but
Blockbuster saved my ass because we had no money when I had the little kids, man. So that was like the big, you know, Blockbuster Video and pizza. That was our night, and then leftover pizza the next day, you know.
Yeah, I used to love that place. I got a job there and they fired me because I had long hair. It's crazy.
That is crazy. Anyway. Hey, you're still around. They're not.
At the moment, knock on wood.
Yeah, thank God, right? Hey, let's talk a little bit about the latest record. It wasn't out actually when I interviewed Charlie. So, you know, I didn't listen to it back then, but it's really great. I mean, it's you know, typical your stuff.
Thanks.
And the name of the album, I don't normally talk about names of album, but it was really like a very special kind of name. It's called Find a Light. It's a real, you know, positive, encouraging thing. And I was curious if there's any backstory to that title.
Well, I just, you know, for me, not, yeah. I can't speak for the other guys. How sure. I feel about it is, you know, the times we are in, man, it just seems a bit rough out there for people. And the way the world's looking, it's a scary place at the moment.
Sure is.
You know, and it's, you know, when your kids notice, your children notice how nuts it is on TV. It's, you know, you have to, you know, you want to find a place for comfort, and that's what Find a Light means. You know, find yourself a place to go to and let go.
Yeah.
And to me, listening to a record, that's,
man, that's, let it go, man. That's the best place to go. Yeah, yeah.
That's what it means for me. I don't, you know.
Yeah, it's a real sweet name. It's a real, you know, you're like, who wouldn't want to pick up something called Find a Light?
Right.
You know, I'm just like, wow. Right. Especially with all the bullshit going on. It's like, wow, this isn't
totally
controversial. This isn't hateful. Wow, that's nice. Let me.
I mean, hell, somebody will be like, yeah, do you have a light? I need a light.
You guys have been touring pretty heavily to support the record since it came out. You mentioned you're just in England this past week, then you're hitting hard back through the States and then back through Europe in the winter. Is there anything different about this tour, either in the audiences or your sets or anything else? as opposed to prior tours? Or,
well, yeah, I mean, about touring this one, we're getting a lot, you know, more newer fans are coming. They hear it.
It's great, man.
In certain places, it's always cool to go, man, I heard you, on so-and-so's car. And it's just, it turned me on, man. And I love you. And it's really cool meeting people and they go, this is my first time seeing you. And you know, I had such a great time. And I'm like, oh man, that turns me on. I love that. And what is really cool is like most of our fans, I say the word fans because that's what they, they're kind of like friends to me. I would rather say friends, but a lot of people go, man, so-and-so turned me on to y'all's music. And that's what it's about, man, getting word of mouth and going, you know, all the people that's come see us through the years, we're just lucky to have those kind of people that, you know, support the band and they, you know, they like to see us. They want to come see us. And I mean, if I could, I'd have a beer with each and every one of them if I could.
Yeah, you'd be real drunk.
Yeah.
Because you got a lot of fans.
I hang out with them as much as I can, you know.
But you're Blackberry Smoke's the kind of band that you don't lose fans. You don't alienate people. You're a very, I don't know, it's just a weird vibe. You know, it's a very family, you know, kind of like the Allman Brothers, very similar to that. You know what you're going for. It's just like very good vibes, man.
You've got something special in my mind, you know, that when you play for people and you meet them and then you see them year after year and the same two people that you meet, they wind up getting married. And by the next time you see them, they get married. By the next time you see them, they have children.
Really? So you've seen that?
And those kids come to our concerts, and we knew their parents before they were born. That kind of thing.
Wow, that's really awesome. But the fact that you notice that stuff and you take that kind of an interest—that's why you got that fan base.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You know,
totally.
It's you guys. You're looking at people as people, not as tickets.
Yeah, it's more, it's a personal thing, you know, for me anyway, it's personal because, you know, we've known some of our fans and, well, friends, and some of them have passed on, you know them long enough and that really hits home to us. We're just like, man, I can't believe it. You know, when it's just, it's special, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that is something that we're lucky to have, you know, knowing people and getting to know their family and stuff. And like we do the Shed in Maryville, Tennessee, the Harley Davidson, the Shed we're doing next week. It's like a reunion. So people from all over the world come to it and hang out.
So cool.
We play 2 days and we get to hang out with them and talk to them. And it's very cool.
But you guys created that. That doesn't happen.
Yeah.
That's not like just random, you know, you guys made that happen in the vibe you put out there and the willingness to connect with people at that level.
Yeah. I mean, it's people, you know, ask me, don't you, you know, they're like, aren't you, how exciting is it to see the people out in the audience? Isn't that crazy? I'm like, I'm more excited to see those people than they are. You know what I mean?
Cause I'm like, man, that's real nice, man.
People ask me, why do I smile so much? Cause I'm up there. I can't believe I'm the luckiest guy on the earth. You know, I'm smiling cause I'm happy.
The best musicians I find are all that have that mindset are just like, you know, I can't believe I get to do this for a living.
Yeah.
You know, I think your fans know that. I think people know that.
Yeah. It could go away like that, you know? So we're lucky
awesome.
As hell. Yeah.
I just want to talk about a few of the songs on on Find a Light. Flesh and Bone. That's a really good song. It really rocks. There's some good slide licks in there. I was curious, were you playing slide or was that Charlie?
No, Charlie did that. I think in my mind, I am the world's worst slice guitar player.
I would doubt that, but
I mean, it's just, I didn't grow up with a slide in my hand, you know, that kind of thing. And it's, I don't know. I just feel like that way.
No,
I like the way Charlie plays slide anyway. I mean, I think it sounds cool as hell.
Who did the outro? Was that you?
On that one?
Yeah.
No, I do it live, but on that record, Charlie does that. So he and I do an outro each live.
Oh, cool.
But on the record, you know, it's Charlie did that.
Okay.
Yeah, he did most of that kind of stuff. He wrote the songs.
Okay.
So on the record, so he gets to them first.
I hear you. But he said you guys pretty much split everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
but on this record he pretty much had a handle on that.
Did he?
And I'm like, I'm one of those people, if it sounds good, hell yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Leave it be.
Right, right. Yeah, that's another thing that, you know, I think makes you guys successful. There's not an ego about anything, you know, at all.
Yeah, I mean, it's I'm all down with it. Like I said, man, I don't want to be, well, I've never been that type of person. Like, well, I should put something there, you know, that kind of thing.
It's, yeah.
I don't worry about that. Yeah.
Run Away From It All. Great harmonies there. Kind of reminded me like a little Tom Petty sounding, that song.
Yeah. We put the 12 string on it.
Okay.
So that's what made it have that really cool Petty vibe.
Yeah. It's just like an American anthem kind of a song.
Yeah. Yeah. I love doing that one live. I mean, I like doing all our songs live, but that this is super new to me still. So it's just so, it flows nice. It's a nice.
Cool great melodies, man.
Cool kind of flow. Yeah. Yeah.
Great melodies.
I like singing that one too. It's fun to sing with Charlie on that one.
Let me ask you a question about the lyric. It says, someone's running away from it all. What's that all about?
That's something Charlie probably could answer on that, on the record. Cause I didn't, like I said, he had a handle on most of the record on it. So.
Gotcha.
So.
And then, last, you got a real good Southern rock song there, Till the Wheels Fall Off.
Oh yeah, dude.
That was, really rocks.
We recorded that I believe it was Like an Arrow, I think, or Holding All the Roses. It was, we recorded it a long time ago.
That's wild.
We finally made this record. Yeah, that's another cool one that Charlie had written a while back. And then it's actually on Junkyard's record. They did it because we didn't do it and we just wanted to put it on this record. But that's the one Charlie wrote. Yeah.
You had that in like storage?
Well, we had it.
Yeah.
And we just didn't put it on the last record and figured why not?
That's great, man.
Yeah.
It's a great cut, man. You don't have to.
Yeah, I love that song.
It's like you guys are kicking ass in there, man.
We've yet to play that live. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we haven't played that one live yet.
That's interesting because that's a rocker, man.
At this point, we haven't played it live. So, yeah. I dig it.
When you first started playing professionally, what were some of the bigger surprises for you just about the music business in general?
Well, just anything, I guess, is what you're asking. Yeah.
Yeah. Anything that was like not.
I didn't realize it could be so competitive. You know, I didn't realize when I was a kid, I was like, man, when I was growing up, I was like, dude, it isn't about how better you are than me or how better I am than you. Just, got me in the beginning, very beginning of playing music, you know, because, and then as I got older, I understood a little bit more but I kind of didn't hang around people like that.
That were into like, oh, let me show you how good I am.
Yeah, that kind of thing. I've never been the, hey, look at me, guitar player.
Yeah.
I never have been. It's not
it doesn't really make, it's like being the strongest guy in the gym, man. It's just not going to happen. And better is so subjective also.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, you're never, I look at it this way. Like I said, this is all how I feel about it, my opinion. you're never going to be as good as you want to be anyway when you play music.
Correct.
You know, because there's so many people that have so many different interpretations of music. And if you hear something like, damn, I wish I could have done that.
Right.
Or damn, I wish I could do that. Or damn, I wish I could do that. You know? And then there's some other musicians out there that just make you want to quit.
Yeah. Yeah. I hear that a lot.
Derek Trucks. Woo.
Oh my.
Listening to him, I'm just like, whatever.
I mean,
it's unbelievable.
Yeah, he's not of this earth, man. I mean,
no,
seriously, it's what he does with that slide is not, I mean,
natural. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It is crazy. But yeah, that, I mean, that about the being surprised stuff, I guess, when starting out is like that, and just the business in itself is kind of weird, but in that's something you have to get used to. You know, like when we started playing in clubs, how ruthless it was. How, you know, when I was little, I mean, I was 17 playing four sets a night.
Holy crap.
Yeah, man. I was doing all that way back in the day.
So, holy smoke.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was, you know, and my mom didn't like it too much, us being in clubs. But
yeah. You know. Did your brother play also?
Yeah, he was my drummer.
Oh, that's wild.
Yeah, I think Britt is the third drummer I've ever had played with in a band.
Wow. That's,
yeah.
Did your brother wind up playing professionally?
No, he plays the drum still. It's just being out on the road is different for him than being out on the road for me.
Yeah.
You know, he kind of has an addictive personality, and it's rough out there, lonely, and
yeah.
It could turn into bad things if you let it happen. And
I'm sure. But,
and he has children now, and he'd much rather not be away from his kids.
Yeah.
So. All of us feel that. We don't want to be away from our kids, but it's what we do. So.
Yeah. Well, it's easier on some people than others, as you said, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
What obstacles after 0 to 12, even, were there any particular obstacles you had to overcome, Paul, that throughout, you know, this entire journey, either musically, personally, or business related?
You know, after I got married at 19, like a goofball,
mm-hmm.
that was an obstacle I had to get over quick. I got over that in 3 months.
Oh, wow. That was a 3 month marriage. Oh, wow.
Yeah,
that's literally a cup of coffee. Good for you.
Yeah. I got it annulled, and we both went our separate ways, but yeah. No, I mean, just going through life, you know, trying to get my feet on the ground planted to where, you know, because when I moved to Atlanta, I moved up there when I was 20.
What made you do that? Did you have friends there? Like, why did you?
No, I just got tired of playing in Pensacola. All the band members, musicians I knew, would, like, say you and I would be in a band, and I'm like, I'm quitting. I'm going to go play these other guys. And you got rid of me, and then you go join another band, and I'm in that same band.
Oh, so it was like
– It was like
– incest.
Yeah, you always wind up
playing
the same. So I did the next best thing and the smartest thing. I moved to Atlanta, and you know what I do? Play with people from Pensacola.
No, you're kidding
the
me.
The whole band.
Oh, man.
We just all moved up to Atlanta.
Funny how that happened. Wow.
Yeah.
But what made you pick there instead of like Nashville or Muscle Shoals?
Well, I've been, you know, we used to, from Pensacola, we would drive up, believe it or not, drive 4.5 hours to go to music stores in Atlanta.
Yeah, I believe that.
And turn around and drive 4.5 hours back.
No, I believe that.
And I wasn't getting anywhere, and I didn't want to play, you know, an acoustic show on the beach the rest of my life.
Yeah.
Which I think that's great. That's fine. I like going down there and listen to it. I mean,
right.
If I had it my way, I'd be at the beach 24 hours a day, all day, but you know, it's not in my cards, but
yet.
Yeah, totally. I just didn't want to do that for a living. I had a vision and I wanted to go after that. At least had to try.
Yeah.
So, and I picked Atlanta because it was so close to where, I don't know, the Crows came from there, you know, and there was a lot of music scene, and I just wanted to give that a shot and stay here there for a couple of years. And if it didn't work, yeah, I probably would have went somewhere else to try.
Yeah. How did you stay so driven? Because, you know, there's a lot of hard times to go through when while you're pursuing that dream. What kept you so motivated, and what kept you, like you just said, even, hey, if Atlanta didn't work, I would have gone somewhere else. You didn't say if Atlanta didn't work, I would have just come back home.
Yeah. It's just the music, playing music. There's something that music does to me. If I didn't have music, I don't think I'd survive at all. If there wasn't music to listen to, you know what I mean? If it just stopped, I just probably wouldn't. I don't think I could, you know. I like music so much, man. If I had it my way, there wouldn't be a TV in my house.
Yeah. No, I hear you, man.
You know, because I get up, you know, sometimes I get up in the morning. Now, stop me if I'm going off to a different
direction. No, man, dude, this to be you.
I get up in the morning, I'm like, why is there no music on? And Amanda's like, I'm just trying to relax before the kids get up. I'm like, all right, well, I get that.
I feel that, man.
But I immediately want to hear tunes, man. I want to hear to get my day started.
Yeah. I totally get it. Yeah, I couldn't picture doing certain things without music. Like, I couldn't picture being in the gym without music. I couldn't picture driving in the car without music.
Yeah.
Most of the day I'm working. When I'm not writing, if I'm writing, I don't have music, but I've always got music on. It would be.
Yeah.
It's just it's like breathing.
Yeah. I'll go make an excuse to mow the lawn so I can put my headphones in.
Yeah, man. No, because it makes life so much. I do the same thing when I got to trim the hedges and shit. Yeah. It's like, yeah man, it's, I get it. Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
And like I said, man, you got it. You did it. You accomplished your dreams. I mean, how cool is that?
It's still mind blowing every day. Like I'm sitting here, you know, when I'm at home, which is rare, I'm always thinking about the next show, you know? Mm. So I'm lucky that I have that next show.
Sure.
To go to.
Yeah.
And I'm proud of myself and this band that we didn't, you know, lose interest, or each of us, some individually had other things better we wanted to do. I'm lucky that I'm with the group of guys that I'm with that enjoy it as much as I do. And we love what we do. We love our music, and, you know.
Man, I'm really happy for you because you have no idea how few people can say that. Like, I'm really proud of myself and I'm so happy that I'm here. I think a lot of people have a hard time. They're like, you're looking onto the next gig, but they're looking onto the next chapter of their life. And you seem like someone who's really good about being in the moment and just being happy with it. And that's a wonderful characteristic, man.
Yeah. I mean, I say that, I guess it goes back to me growing up and all the things that I went through. I am lucky, you know?
Yeah.
I made it through some really crazy, weird times.
Tough times.
Yeah. And my mom didn't kill me in the process. We put that woman through hell, boy.
Woo. Yeah. Two boys. I would imagine
that. I just think it's one of the coolest things. I have nothing to complain about.
Yeah.
I don't, I had something I wanted to do, and I went out and doing it, and I'm still not to the point where I want. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm always wanting to. If I get somewhere, I'm like, oh, I need to do this. If I get there, I need to do that.
Sure. But you're enjoying it while you're there. It's a lot of people can't. They're only looking at the next thing, and it's hard for them. You seem like you're really cool about being in the moment, man. Like, you're not in any rush or anything like that.
Nah.
Is your mom in Atlanta, or is she in Pensacola?
No, she moved. She was a. Manager for a newspaper. She moved to Fort Payne, Alabama, where the band Alabama's from.
Okay.
Yeah, so they got statues there and everything. It's a small town.
Yeah.
So I lived there for a year and a half. When I got divorced with my second wife, I went out on the road and didn't have a place to put my stuff for 6 months with ZZ Top, or 6 weeks or whatever it was. And mom's like, just put your stuff in my basement and then worry about getting a place. I didn't want to have a house or rent a place and not be there.
Yeah, I totally get that.
So she just put your junk, and that's what it was. It was junk.
That's cool.
In my basement. And then I wound up going there and lived there for a year and a half. And now I'm waiting for my statue.
Yeah, man.
I know, like the mayor of the town and stuff. And I said, I just want a 12-inch statue. A
12-inch statue.
Behind the Alabama, ones, just behind their little fence, just sitting there.
There you go, man.
So people can pee on it or something. I don't know.
Let's start a Kickstarter campaign.
Yeah, totally.
Statue for Paul Jackson. And what's the town?
Fort Payne, Alabama, or a bobblehead.
A bobblehead, yeah. No, I think a statue is more appropriate, man. You need a statue. Hey, let's talk about gear for a few minutes.
Okay.
What's your go-to guitar right now, and what other two guitars might round out your top three?
Well, at the moment, I mean, it's always been my 79 Les Paul. That's the one I like. It's not the pancake Les Pauls. This is a
big, thick, heavy. Yeah.
Yeah, it's heavy as hell. I love it because the neck, I don't have really big, long spider fingers, and
so it's a thin neck.
Yeah, yeah,
that's great.
It's thin. And then I just bought a 68 ES335.
Nice.
Yeah,
that must sound beautiful, man.
Walnut. I've been looking for that, a walnut ES335, a vintage one, for God, I can't, for a long time, and I found it here in Noonan, Georgia.
You found it in Noonan? Oh my God, that's wild. I was just about to ask you, where'd you get that? What's the likelihood?
My buddy has a guitar shop here called Brown's Guitar Mill.
There you go. Shout out to Brown's.
Yeah, and he has it's with a record store, so it's Vinyl Light Records. I go up there, buy records, and look at guitars all day.
There you go.
So, and I found an
addictive place.
Yeah, he knew I was looking for one, so he called me and said, come here, I got to show you something. And Amanda wasn't happy that day because I bought it immediately when I saw it.
Oh, come on, man. You're a pro. You got to have your tools,
Yeah, she's like, can you sell some of these? I'm like, absolutely not.
Yeah, man. You're a pro. You need tools,
Yeah.
If you're a dentist, you'd have all these tools, or a doctor, right? You got to have tools. That's great, man. What made you get walnut? That's just, you just had a vibe for that?
I like the natural, the color, the way wood looks anyway. You can see it, I mean my Les Paul's that way, and I have a couple black guitars
too. Yeah, I've seen you play. Both of you guys are all humbuckers. That's true.
Yeah, Troy does a P90s, and I did the humbuckers for a long time. It's different sounds, so it kind of makes it works different. Well together. But I'm getting, I have P90s put in my 135. I had P90s put in it. They sound great.
That's a jazz box of 135?
I think. Yes, it is 135, right? I'm trying to remember.
It looks like a big, thick Les Paul, sort of.
Yeah, it's about, yeah. Yeah, it's a nice guitar. It's just the pickups that were in it weren't doing it. You could tell when I plugged it in, it wasn't as loud as the other guitars, so I just changed them out.
Is that semi-hollow?
Yeah, it's semi-hollow.
Is it feedback bad?
Not that one.
Really?
It never did. Or if it did, I know how to control it, so I don't really.
It's your bad.
The 335 feeds back if I'm not careful, but I kind of know how to get around that.
Sure.
Kind of thing. With my hands and stuff like that. Yeah.
So your Les Paul 335, and would the 171, the jazz box be your third one, or is there something else before that?
No, I have my SG. It's a 91 reissue SG, that white one.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like that one a lot. Yeah. Outside of my Les Paul, actually, I tried to switch them around because I have so many, you know, that I have some here that I like to take out.
Yeah.
And it's just hard because our stuff is always packed away. I don't want to bring like two guitars and stick them on the bus with 11 dudes in it because there's nowhere to put them.
Yeah. So you have cartage.
So it's hard to take them off out of the box and bring them home and then bring them home to the box, you know?
Yeah, I get it.
Cause I don't want to be that guy in the bus that has like 80 million guitars laying around.
Well, that 68 335 though. Is that any concerns taking that out?
No, it's out.
Oh, it's out.
It went to the UK and everything with me.
Nice, man. Wow.
Yeah, I don't see the reason buying a guitar and not playing it. I think it's silly.
No, I agree with you. That's just a very nice guitar, man. But yeah. You know, I think, you know, Greg Martin, I think he brings his 58 out.
Yeah.
Once in a while as well.
He brought it and let us play it.
Did he?
Like, okay. I was like, here, take this back because I don't want to be responsible.
I know, man. That
is crazy cool, man.
Awesome. He's a wonderful human being, man. Just a soulful, very soulful cat. Real special.
I'm always telling him, like, I'm like, dude, more YouTube clips so I can steal shit from you.
He's so mellow, man. He's like, he said, Greg, your tone is so great. He goes, well, you know, he's got such, and you know what, man, honestly, Gibson should, like, you know how Gibson has a lot of artists?
Yeah.
And you guys are the same. Like, he actually only plays as Gibson.
I know.
You know, they should like really like hook him up or reissue that guitar or something, man.
They absolutely should. Yeah.
Because that's all he plays, man. He doesn't play. You don't see him with strats. I mean, maybe one video or he's got a Tele, a 52 vintage Tele he just got. But that's his thing, man.
Gibson, shame on them for not doing it, actually. I know, man. I'm just saying. I mean, they're going through some rough times themselves.
Yeah. It was funny, man. It was, I don't know if I should say this, but I will. At NAMM, a bunch of people, I was one of them, got invited to a barbecue. That's why I was hanging out with Steve from Otis. Right. And they had this massive barbecue, and everybody's sitting there like, man, aren't they in bankruptcy? Who's paying for it? It was a giant barbecue, man. It was like, holy shit. It was great. A lot of fun. Yeah. We got to see the factory, man. It was like, we see all these guitars hanging up on the walls. And we had a good, really nice time. A lot of cool people there. It was like,
that's awesome.
Yeah. It was just weird to like, I don't know.
When was this?
Just at NAMM last weekend.
This in Nashville?
Yeah. Summer NAMM.
Man, I am always gone when it comes to that guy. I never get to go to that, man. I would love to go.
There's a cool
geek out.
It was great. There's a cool picture. Awesome. The guys from Otis, Greg.
Love those guys.
Yeah, they're really nice guys. It was Greg. You know Paul Nelson?
You broke up a little bit.
Do you know Paul Nelson?
Oh, do I?
He's Johnny Winter's guitar player and producer. Paul Nelson, myself, a couple of other guys, this big picture. It was a real nice, you know, just.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. Oh, I did see that.
You saw that? Yeah, it was cool.
I saw the photo.
Yeah, it was a cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah, we're all just, and everybody, you know, it was really nice. Greg was leaving and everybody was like, oh, we're going to go say goodbye to Greg. Like, that's the only reason all those people were there. It shows you how everybody thinks so highly of Greg, man. Everybody's just
he is crazy cool. I love that guy. Yeah,
he's just an awesome.
Yeah.
Hey, what was your first guitar that you played, that your mom bought you?
Well, it was a Memphis. I don't know if you remember that guitar company.
No.
When I got out of the crew concert, we went guitar shopping the next day, and I saw
your mom's very cool, man. I got to tell you.
Yes. Yeah, she's a hoot, man. I swear. She took me to the music store, and I looked on the wall and said, oh, my God. I have to have that guitar. And she goes, what guitar is it? That white one. And the whole entire thing was white. Like everything. I got a picture of it somewhere. I think the neck might have been rosewood, but maybe. But everything on it was white. The knobs, the bar. It was crazy.
What was the body style?
Huh?
What was the body style?
It looked like the body. Remember the Area Pros?
Yeah, kind of.
or Westones, man, back in the '80s, the Westone guitars. It was cheap. This thing was, it was like a Strat kind of style, but it had little points. It was pointier on the ends. And then
you still have it?
Yeah. It perished. I think my brother burned it or something.
Nice. Was he like doing a Hendrix impersonation or something?
No, he was just, you're not using this. And just
burned it. Yeah. All right, man. That's how he rolls. It's good.
Yeah.
Do you remember the first? Was it?
She made me, my mom, she goes, I'll buy you this guitar. And if you are playing guitar in a year, I'll get you a better one. She knew it wasn't really that good of a guitar. And I said, okay.
Yeah, but that's so cool.
Yeah.
That's a really cool thing to do because you want them to have skin in the game. I mean, you got kids. Yeah. You know, you can't just say, here's a Les Paul.
Yeah. And she was super worried about us too after Dad had passed. Was,
I'm sure.
You know, we didn't go out and start doing dumb stuff. And, you know, other than jumping off the roof into our pool, that's pretty much, you know, we didn't go break into cars or vandalize anything, you know. And I think that had a lot to do with our family.
Yeah.
The Jacksons, the Indians, you know, they made sure we were always okay. They come by.
They came and looked after you then after your dad passed. That's great. That's really good. Well, at least you had plus you had some male accountability.
Yeah.
Which has probably kept you guys in check.
Yeah. My cousins would, like I said, they would come and the fire department too, they were really good. You know, they back in the day, I'm dating myself. Back in the day, remember when three wheelers were popular?
Of course. Yeah.
They, a bunch of firefighters they were renting them on the beach and they would come pick us up every morning to go out there to work.
Oh, that's great.
Know, teach people how to ride them and gas them up and just to keep our minds, you know.
That's fantastic. Man, that's great.
Yeah.
That's great that you had people looking after you like that. That was important. That probably helped you out a lot more than you thought.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I had a really good life so far, and I was lucky.
That's awesome.
To go through that. Yeah.
Do you remember the first CD or record? No, you're not my age, but you're probably 10 years younger than me, I guess. So you probably started buying records, not CDs, I would imagine.
Yeah.
What was the first record you got? Do you remember?
It was the first record I paid for was Triumph Allied Forces.
Yeah, what a great record. Holy shit. That was an awesome record.
Like I said, it probably gets redundant talking about the fire department, but there was a humane society behind the fire department because we would always walk to my dad's work and hang out.
Sure.
You know, and at 6 years old, we just would. A lot of back then we could walk the streets, you know, and they were having a record sale for some reason to raise money for the Humane Society. And my dad gave me 10 cents.
And you got Triumph Allied Forces.
He gave me a dime and I bought that record for a dime. Somehow.
That's great.
The lady sold it to me for the dime. I said, this is all I have. And I bought it because the cool looking guitar on the front of it.
Yeah, man, that was a great album.
And then I took it home and I was like, oh my God. You know?
Yeah, you didn't know what you had. You thought you just had something to get. Yeah,
Dad, we didn't have that kind of stuff in the house at the time.
Yeah.
You know, my dad was, you know, like we had like Johnny Cash, Chuck Berry, you know, Tom Jones, stuff like that, Beach Boys.
Mm.
So when I took that record home, I was like, oh my Lord.
So you had like top early, like mid to late 60s, 70s pop, the AM radio kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And my mom had some other weird record. It's funny. I still have the Chipmunk Punk record sitting in there.
That's so funny. Did you play it for your kids when they were growing up? Yeah.
Yeah. And then I have the, what's it called? Wacky Songs. It had like, you know, She Wore an Itsy Bitsy Teeny Weeny.
Yeah. I remember.
It was one of them K-Tel records.
Yeah. K-Tel.
She saved that and my 8-year-old listens to it down here on my vinyl.
That's great.
Yeah, it's trippy. Triumph record was my first like full vinyl that I bought.
Yeah, it's a great record, man. Do you so if you had to pick three Desert Island discs.
Ooh, that's tough.
But in no order, and just for today, like you could change them tomorrow. So like what would be your knee jerk reaction?
Oh, I like live records, man. I think they're So my number one, obviously, be the Allman Brothers.
I was going to say, let me just write that one down.
Shaver Unshaven, Billy Joe Shaver record. I don't know if you've listened to Charlie, turned me on to it.
I know when he is.
First got into Blackberry Smoke, and when we first started, Eddie Shaver was a guitar player. He has passed, you know, he died. But he it's unbelievable record. You talking about some guitar playing.
Woo! I'm going to have to check that out. I'm going to highlight it here.
Yeah. Unshaven, Billy Joe Shaver. Well, Shaver, I guess. But. And, and Journey Captured. I love that record.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I sang all my life, so I'm really big into that vocal thing, and that record is killer, man. A lot of people don't talk about it.
No, they don't. I don't even know if I even heard that record.
Captured. Oh yeah. It's badass. It's really good. That's
another one I'll have to get check out.
I mean, there's great. Those guys were great musicians.
Oh my God. Yeah. Great songwriters.
Ugh, insanity. This is before Jonathan Cain was in the band.
Sure.
This Greg Raleigh was still in it. I think that was Raleigh's last record. So, but.
Well, you think about Neil Sean was in Santana.
Yeah.
I mean.
And what was he, like 16 or something like that?
He was very young. Imagine that kind of training.
Yeah. I mean, it's insane. And just, I don't know, man. A lot of people frown about that, but I don't. I think it's
about what?
I don't think about Journey. So that, you know,
no, they're a great band. Come on, man. They may be frowning. Let me tell you, Journey's laughing all the way to the bank. They're frowning, but they probably bought the record.
Yeah,
you know,
I definitely did.
Yeah,
I bought. I have every one of them. I know that.
That's cool. Hey, when I interviewed Charlie, one of the things he talked about was getting sober, and I think he said that pretty much. The whole band got sober around the same time.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's put this way, when your buddies are going through something like that, I wasn't going to be one to, you know, if they're trying hard to not do something, you know, I wasn't going to sit there and do it in front of their face. Yeah. So we all kind of slowed down. You know, a little bit. I still drink. Mm. I don't, you know, and he knows that. He's gotten to the point where he's okay with Brit having a beer, you know, that kind of thing.
Sure.
But when he started, I knew how important that was, you know. So who am I to be a butthead and, you know, rub it in his face, you know?
Man, you know what? I'm the same way. I've got buddies that are sober. Even though they've been sober a long time, when I go out with them, I never drink. And they're always like, why don't you drink? I'm like, no, it's cool. I just, like, it's not necessary. You know, it's like, I don't have to drink. And I just feel like, man, you know, we're hanging out. I'm drinking. He's not. I'm the same exact way, man. I thought
it would be kind of crappy to do that.
Yeah. You know?
If your friend is trying to,
we just want to support, be supportive, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's, to me, that's like how I feel I'm being supportive, you know?
Yeah, but I think I stopped. I literally didn't drink anything for like 6 months to almost, you know?
That's a long time.
8-9 months because I knew he was struggling.
That's a long time.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's, you know, he's my friend. So, what, you know?
Well, you guys are like, probably like, I got to believe. Let me ask this question. I want to ask this question to somebody was in a band for a long time and broke up I'm curious how that works relationship wise. Cause it's like, if you work with someone for 15 years in an office and then you leave, it's much different than being in a band with somebody for 15 years. Cause you're living together, you're sleeping together, you're eating together, you're playing. I mean, it's like, that's not,
it could get hard at times, but
yeah.
I mean, it can really get hard times, but you know how to, you know, we're not hotheads, so we know how to handle that kind of thing. You know, if I can wake up in the morning and tell right away if somebody's having a good day or a bad day on that bus.
Yeah.
I pretty much just, all right, well, I'll just go about my business, let them have their space.
Yeah.
You know, because I mean, it's, you know, there's a lot of ball busting and whatnot, but
of course it's guys.
It is what it is, you know?
Yes.
Yeah. I tend to not do it as much as I used to because my ball busting is a little different than somebody else's ball busting. I grew up with my brother. My brother and I, we fought every day.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, and that's just how we were. And some of those guys didn't grow up that way. So I don't do that to them.
Yeah.
You know,
man, you're a very like respectful guy, man. In general, you know.
Yeah.
Here's the test. If I asked your, you seem like a real easy guy to deal with. If I asked your wife, what would she say?
Not her.
That's the everybody says, like people have said, oh man, you seem like real easy. I'm like, you know what? Well, not according to my wife.
I'm constantly thinking about other people besides myself.
Yeah.
Majority of the time. I'm not going, what can I, this is for me. What can I do? I can do that. You know, I'm not that type of guy. But when I get home, you know?
Yeah, but decompressing for you is a lot different, I bet, for normal people because you're going 100 miles an hour and you're not in your own house, you're not in your own bedroom, you're not in your own bed. So when you come home, like I would imagine like you go from 100 to zero, like you probably don't want to do anything at all.
I don't.
Yeah, I can't blame you.
And my brother's like, come over. I'm like, absolutely not. You come over here.
Yeah, I totally get that, man. Because you know, I'm like super intense and I'm the same way. And I'm not running all over the world. Yeah, I couldn't imagine.
But my mind doesn't stop here either. I feel like I have to be doing something. Yeah, like, no, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, I totally. It's a blessing and a curse, though, to have that, to be honest with you. For me, anyway.
Yeah, Amanda's like, sit down and relax. And I'm like, I'm good. I'm going to go upstairs and look through the closet.
Man, you know what I did yesterday? It was the 4th, and I honestly, I'm kind of ashamed to say this, but it's the truth. It's probably the first holiday in ages where I didn't work at all. As soon as my kids came over, I just hung out with them all day. And you know what? And at the end of the day, I said, you know what, man, you're an idiot. You should have been doing this all the time.
Yeah.
But I'm the same though. My mind's always like, man, I got something to do. I got to finish this, but I'm not. And because I'm older now and I'm real, my time is much more of a priority, you know,
right.
But I literally spent all day with my kids.
Yeah. That's a cool feeling to do, man. I mean,
it was wonderful, man.
Yeah. It's awesome. I mean, this household, my household does not run like a lot of people's household. If there was ever a reality show, like a real one, not them telling you what to do and shit.
Yeah.
And stuff. Sorry, I didn't mean to cuss. But,
no, you can curse whatever you want, man.
Okay. This house would be it because it is nuts around here. The only reason they're not down here now because I told them to stay out of here.
Oh, really?
But yeah, it is absolutely pandemonium here all the time.
You got young kids, though. That's why. You got a 14-year-old and an 8-year-old. That's
8-year-old. And I got a 15-year-old stepdaughter who's, I think she just came out of her room. What time is it? 4?
Yeah, that's the way the girls are, man. Let me tell you, girls, my one daughter's exponentially more difficult than both of my sons together, man.
Oh, man. And it's, you talking about splitting hairs. I'm day. I'm like, okay, if you say something, she'll come back. And she's super smart. And I just look at her like I'm dumbfounded half the time. Okay. And I just walk off.
Yeah, girls are, I found the same. My daughter was very, she's 18 now. We're through the thick of it. It's great. I mean, like, I'm so happy. That was a real, that's for me, girl was tough, man.
Hey, I'm lucky I got good, respectful kids. My kids are respectful to others, thank God. So,
yeah, mine are the same way. Like, I'd get compliments on them all the time. I'd be like, my kids? Because, like, they're certainly not that way with me, but I mean, that was really important for me. I hate, man, I'm sure you see it. We have these kids that come over the house when they're young, just sitting down at the dinner table. I swear, I remember one time a kid goes, hey, give me the butter. I'm like, what?
Totally.
I'm like, what?
Man, I had a kid over here the other day. One of my son's friends, this kid's a good kid, but he like was messing around with my microphones and broke my microphone holder off my microphone stand.
You're kidding me?
Yeah, dude. I found it on the floor and I was like, oh, come on. If I knew that he went over to my kid would go over to his friend's parents' house and his dad did something for a living and broke something, Oh, hell no.
Yeah, I know. It's really, man, I think it's so important. It's like, because when your kids get older and they have that, it's, man, you know how much thank you and please, how far that gets you in life.
Oh, I know, right?
Oh, totally. My God, man. And I just wanted to drill that into their head, and they're really good with that now. And when you talk to people now, I hear them on the phone. They're like, yes, ma'am, yes, sir. Yeah. That makes me really proud, because I feel good that, you know, they're doing the right thing, you know?
Totally. Yeah, I mean, it's, that's awesome.
Yeah, well, I never forget that one. That kid, hey, pass the butter. I wanted to knock that kid. Telling my wife, you're talking about, hey, pass the butter. I'm like, what?
Pass the butter.
No, hey, pass the butter. He's talking about, hey, no, it was, hey, give me some butter. That's what it was. Hey, give me some butter.
I was like, every dinner, I'm going to do that to you. Hey, give me some butter.
Yeah, you can, though. You get a pass.
That's great.
Hey, man, what's the most important, what things that you've learned about yourself over this journey?
Like learned about myself.
Yeah. I mean,
that, like, I don't already know.
Well, things like, you know, like, what did you learn about your character? This has been a long journey. It has not been easy. You've worked like a dog. You've had to be super persistent, super motivated. You've been through good times and bad times.
I feel like I've been the same person that if you knew me when I was a kid, you'd know me now. Obviously I grew up with, you know, bills and whatnot, but I'm telling you, I'm in the position that we're in. It probably got up to my kneecaps. It's not up to my head. You know what I'm saying?
I do. Yes.
I'm not like, oh, you know, like I'm not an asshole.
Yeah. Hey, I'm Paul Jackson. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I wipe my ass like everybody else does, man.
Yeah. Yeah. I know.
That is honest. I'm the same person I've been since started.
Man, that's
really, I don't know about learning anything new about myself. That's pretty much about it.
That's awesome. That's really wonderful, man. Most important person in your life.
My wife.
Third time's a charm.
Yeah, dude. I mean, it's so funny. Her and I went to middle school and high school together.
Really?
And she used to come see me at I played a teen club
for so cool.
3 years, and she used to come see me every weekend. Like, literally. That was the place to go for the kids. And then, you know, as we got older and I got married, moved to Atlanta. We never dated, her and I. We'd go canoeing together, all of us, like a bunch of group.
Yeah.
Of kids. Like our, the word fans again, but I call them our friends, because we got close with everybody.
Sure.
We'd all get together and go do things when we weren't playing. So
that's so cool. So how did we
reconnected?
Yeah.
We reconnected, about 11 years ago.
That's great, man.
And she was down in Seminole, Florida, down in Sarasota.
Yes, down Seminole is just here in St. Pete, isn't it?
Yeah,
yeah.
Or St. Pete.
Yeah.
And when I moved to Atlanta, a lot of people from Pensacola, they'd either go north or they would go to New Orleans.
Okay.
They didn't want to get too far away from the teat. I called it. So she went to New Orleans. I went to Atlanta. And we lost, you know, connection with each other. And then we reconnected.
Facebook, let me guess.
No, it was MySpace.
Okay, MySpace.
Now you I'm old school, dating yourself,
brother.
I'm old school.
That's great, man. That's a nice love story there, man.
We reconnected, and I would get off the bus. Get out of the van. And then get in my car and drive 7 hours down.
Yeah, it's a where haul you guys are from you to here.
And spend the Monday, Tuesday with her, and then get back to go back out on the road and make it no cash whatsoever. But we just knew.
That's awesome.
We just knew. You know, when I first met her, I was kind of like mad at myself, because I could have avoided everything. We should have just dated.
It doesn't work like that, bro.
Yeah.
It doesn't work like that.
But it's really cool, because, you know, I miss home. I miss Pensacola so much. I do. And, you know, she said it best. She's like, did you ever think, like, whenever we moved away from Pensacola, she said it like, I never feel like I'm at home because I'm not there. But us together, I feel like I'm home.
Oh, man, that's...
Because it's a connection.
Yeah, that's something special, man.
Yeah, but she's definitely the luckiest guy, I swear.
Good for you, man.
And she understands what I do for a living.
That's really cool.
For musicians, you know, that's hard to come by.
Yeah.
You know.
That's great, man. I'm really happy for you.
Thanks. And they don't want me home anyway.
No, but I know. Listen, man, I'd be honest. I feel the same way about my wife, and I feel very lucky. You know, I like married above my pay scale, and she doesn't know it, she's okay with it. But man, so I know how that feels. So I'm really happy for you. That's a great story, man.
Thanks.
Most important thing your dad taught you.
Man, to be respectful to people, you know. It's not always all about you. You know, I watch my dad save people's lives. I literally have seen that with my eyeballs. You know, he just help people if you can help. You know, if you're able to do so, do it. And as long as you have a breath in your body, and like I said, you can make it happen, help. You know, be respectful and help people.
It's nice, man. How about your mom? Most important thing she taught you?
Oh, man. Most important things she taught me?
Yeah.
How to handle things in life. You know, because when my dad passed, she had to be my mom and my dad.
Yeah.
You know, I call her every Father's Day and wish her happy Father's Day.
Dude, that is, you're a first class guy. I swear, I mean, man.
It's, you know, I never,
that
when
is,
I was,
man,
whenever I was going through, thanks, I appreciate that. Whenever I was going through like super hard times in the beginning before Blackberry Smoke or whatever, she'd always ask me if I needed anything. And I would think about what my dad would say. It'd be like, I would tell her all the time, like, Mom, you're my rainy day and it's not raining.
Yeah.
I'm all right. I'll figure a way out of this. I'll fix it. If I need help, I'll ask, you know, but she's, you know, she definitely was there for me. She's still there for me. She called me today, you know,
that's really cool.
Asking if I'm okay. You know,
that's wonderful. And she did a great job. Both your parents, man. That's clear.
Oh, thanks. Thanks. She definitely taught me how to handle my finances. I remember she came over to my house after I got divorced. Man. And she's turned me – I'm neurotic about it now.
Good.
About my bill paying, dude. It's nuts.
Yeah, well, you got to do it.
Amanda's like, it's not like a bill come in. It's not due. And I'm like, I don't care paying.
Yeah, well, you don't want to get caught up.
No, yeah, dude.
That's just a headache that you don't want to deal with, man.
It's crazy.
Hey, do you have any hobbies or interests outside of music?
Oh, this house I just bought. But no, like, if you're talking about, like, I like to fish when I can, and it's really hard.
Bass fishing, right?
Yeah, I live in Noonan, and there's just these little lakes. And like I said, when I come home, I don't want to go anywhere.
Yeah.
It's, you know.
Like little retention ponds, kind of?
I just cast.
Yeah.
You know? And I have a really cool aquarium I have. Those are my pets. Amanda's got the dog, the cat, and 6 million birds I got to feed. That's her thing. But.
That's cool, man.
I don't know, man. Outside of playing. Like I said, man, I'm usually exhausted when I come home.
I totally get that, man. You have a very tough job, physically, emotionally, mentally. You know, it's nonstop. You know, you got to.
Yeah,
be,
you know, I don't notice until I walk through the front door. I'm tired. I'm like, oh my God, I'm exhausted.
Yeah.
You know, like, cause you know, out there I'm constantly bouncing off the walls, you know?
But, well, and you got a bunch of other guys doing it with you.
Right.
You know, so it's like you have the camaraderie, you're all in a mission together, and you've been doing it together for so long. It's not like you got to work out the kinks. You guys are a well-oiled machine at this point, you know, and right. Just execute, you know, like a machine, you know. And then I'm not saying you're not yourself, on the, but I'm saying, you know, mechanically, right. Whatever you have to do, you right. know, it's like it's just done. You know how to get from here to there. It's not like a big deal. You don't have to put too much thought into it, you know, whether it's plane, right. bus, van, whatever, you know. So yeah, I could totally see that, man. Hey, one more question. Well, two more questions, Paul. Yeah. And I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no worries.
What's the best advice you've ever been given, if you could think of it?
In the music business or just in general?
In general.
You know, best advice is be kind, man. I was told that by a musician, actually.
Really?
Yeah. He said, man, just be nice to people. Yeah. You don't be an ass. Just be nice. You know, I know I sound like Dalton off Roadhouse, but
no, everybody says, you know, don't be a dick in the music business. Yeah, you know,
it's just, there's literally no point. And I haven't met a lot of people in the music business know how to handle themselves. They're nice people. And
yeah,
but yeah, I mean, it's just be nice. It'll take you a long way, you know?
And it's a lot less stressful, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Gosh, I mean, a lot less stressful. Some people can take, you know, your kindness as a sign of weakness, but that's their problem.
Yeah. Not yours. Yeah. 100%. That's not the guy you're worried about being nice to anyway.
Yeah, totally.
You know, I mean, that's a different animal, man.
Yeah.
And the last question, which you might have answered already, was what's been the biggest change in your personality, let's say, over the last 10 years, and how much of this change has been deliberate and intentional, and how much has just been a part of aging?
All right, say the question one more time so I can get it.
Yeah. Sure. What's been the biggest change in your personality over the last 10 years, and how much of this change has been deliberate and intentional, and how much is just a natural part of aging?
Oh, just like being thankful and lucky kind of thing. Is that what you're talking about?
Whatever, however you think you've changed in the last 10 years. I think you've always been like that. I don't think that's a change. I mean, I don't know you 10 years, but I would say you're either like that or you're not.
Yeah. I mean,
And you may not have had it. You said pretty much you're the same guy. Your personality may not have changed very much.
I am the same guy. I think I'm a little bit more, my wife says, neurotic. But she says I do things the hard way instead of the easy way most of the times. Like I'll go pay my bills instead of pressing a button.
Oh, like you'll write out a check or you'll go down
I'll go down and pay it.
Oh, my God. Yeah. You need to.
I don't know. You
should ask your 14-year-old how to do this most efficiently. That's where they come in, man. He'll be like, you know, done, Dad. What are you doing?
I went and paid the electric bill yesterday, and my wife's like, "Why are we coming over here?" And I was like,
"Oh my god, that is so funny. That's hilarious, man."
No, but to answer your question, I'm the same person.
You're same dude.
Yeah,
that's awesome, man.
I've always. Smile. I don't know. I just can't get the smile off my face. I can try, but it just
don't. I'll
start thinking about it, and it makes me smile because
stay that way, man. Stay that way, and like you've done a great job finding a light, man. Yeah. So I'm glad you're providing it to others, man.
I didn't get in the music business to grow up. Put it that way.
Just keep doing whatever you're doing, man. You're like the nicest guy, man. Like I feel like I've known you 10 years or 15 years. You're a really easy guy to talk to. Very sweet guy, man. So just keep doing what you're doing, brother.
I appreciate it. I'll do my best.
Hey, man, I can't thank you enough for your time. Thank you for everything and all your sharing everything.
I appreciate you asking me to do this. It's cool.
Thank you.
I dig it.
That's great. I want to tell everybody, first of all, it's Paul Jackson that we've been with today from Blackberry Smoke. And the last album is Find a Light. Please go check it out. buy it. Don't stream it. These guys. Are, I mean, I'm old school. Like my kids are always like, Dad, why don't you stream music? I'm like, it's wrong.
you know what I listen. Sorry to take it too much.
No,
time.
Go ahead, man. Yeah. Take about, it. It's your show.
My opinion about the streaming stuff. I literally own the records I listen to on. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I'm the same way. I own some of them, but I have all my shit on iTunes.
Yeah, I mean, I like all my vinyl in here.
Right.
I stream that shit on. I like to have it with me when I'm gone.
So you take the vinyl with you? What do you do?
No. I'm saying like say I got Ozzy's Blizzard of Oz over here. That's what I stream.
Okay. Okay. So whatever you stream what you own. Yeah. Okay. I get you. Mine is like similar. I don't stream it, but I have like 50,000 or 60,000 songs on iTunes. It's up in the cloud. If I'm in the gym, no matter where I am, I could listen to it.
That's what I'm.
It's
you
like
want it there.
Yeah. Music's like, it's like books and records. They're like friends, man, to me. So yeah. I want all them friends around me. And I just, my kids are like, it's $10. And I'm like, it's not the money. First of all, I don't have time to listen to a lot of new stuff. I have so much stuff I like, you know, that I want to listen to, like Ozzy's Blizzard of Oz or Dark Side of the Moon, you know?
Right.
I can't listen to that enough.
I will tell you this with the streaming. Hypothetically at this point, the Crows put out a new record.
Right.
I'll listen to it and then I'll be like, I'm buying this immediately anyway.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. So, yeah.
It does help in the aspect of listening to a new band and going, man, I dig this. I'm going to buy this record.
There you go.
And that's how I use it for that.
Sure. And I totally get that.
That's what I pretty much basically listen to what I have own anyway.
So the bottom line is buy Find a Light from Black Girl Smoke.
Yeah, totally. So I don't know why I got off.
No, man, it's just this is your show, man. You can talk whatever you want about, man. So let me tell you, go to Blackberry Smoke because they are on a massive tour. Go to blackberrysmoke.com, rather. Please support. If you've never seen them, I'm not saying this because Paul's on the show. They're a really wonderful band. And, man, how could you not want to see a guy who's got that, you know, the sunshine radiating off him like he has, man. They're playing, you know, Tennessee, New York, Pennsylvania. They're touring throughout the Midwest, Ohio, all over the place, Iowa. They're playing Sturgis Motorcycle Rally in South Dakota. I mean, they're going to be all over. This has been a really long tour for them supporting this record. And then starting in Alabama, Atlanta, and then they're going to 3 days in New York City. That's badass, man.
Yeah, I'm stoked about that.
That is really cool.
I just hope I don't spend too much money while I'm there.
Well, I'll tell you where to eat breakfast on the cheap so you don't have to spend $50. And then they're headed out to Germany in October, mid-October, Switzerland, Italy, Germany back again, Sweden, Norway, the Netherlands, you know, Northern Europe, Belgium, France, then down to the UK, Ireland, a bunch of places in England they're playing, and then back to New York City. And if you guys are interested, they are playing the 2019 Southern Rock Cruise.
Yeah.
That leaves here out of Tampa, Florida. That's January 6th to January 12th of 2019. So if you're interested in that, go to blackberrysmoke.com and click on the tour tab. I think it's right at the bottom. The cruise is right now and you can get tickets. And I know those are a lot of fun. And also you could find Paul on Instagram. It's Paul BBS for Blackberry Smoke. And again, check out the new EP. It's Find a Light. It's a beautiful record. All their music is great. It's very soulful. It's all blues based. It's, you know, if you haven't heard it, it's like I'm leery to say it's Southern rock. It's really like a lot of everything. Yes. It's just really old school to me. Good rock and roll. It's the kind of music that I like listening to. Man, thank you for everything. You've been awesome. I'm so glad I got to connect with you, man.
I really appreciate you having me on. This is cool.
Awesome, very man.
Cool. I dig the show, man. They're great.
Thank you.
Great stuff.
Everybody, thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this interview as much as I did. Go support Paul Jackson and the guys in Blackberry Smoke. Thanks again to Paul for spending time with us. I appreciate it. Check out Find the Light, man. Thank you. And go to everyonelovesguitar.com. Sign up to our newsletter right now. And remember, most important is that happiness is a choice. So choose wisely. Be nice.
That's right.
Go play your guitar and have fun. Till next time, peace and love, everybody. I'm out. We hope you enjoyed this show. If you did, subscribe to the Everyone Loves Guitar podcast, and you can do this online at everyonelovesguitar.com or on iTunes. And if you like the show, please leave us a 5-star positive review. The more 5-star reviews we get, the higher our show ranks, and higher rankings mean we get to continue speaking with cool, interesting guests on our show. We'll see you on the next episode, and until then, keep playing your guitar and have fun making music.